Welcome to the Minecraft of Short Stories podcast. This episode is the most special episode ever seen on this podcast. Not only are we celebrating 500,000 all-time plays, we're also celebrating 700 Apple Podcast reviews, and this is the 50th episode. Thank you guys so much for all three of those things, except I guess the 50 episodes thanks to myself. Nah, never mind. Thank you guys for your support. Also, thank you for the 188 subscribers on the YouTube channel. If you would like to see a three-way or four-way collab, just go subscribe to the YouTube channel. At 1,000 subscribers, we will have that. Also, if you want to support the podcast even more, there is merch. High quality, Bell Plus Canvas, soft. So here's what we're going to be doing inside this episode. First, I'm going to be saying the second part of the village story. And then, because I said what the most popular name was inside the question would be the name, it is called the Defend the Village. This is Defend the Village Part 2. We'll also be hearing a story by Zachariah, sent in through my website, MinecraftShortStories.com. Check it out. But if you have not heard the first part of Defend the Village, that was the episode before last. Go check that out. Also, the episode from a little while ago, it's called Our Golden Tool Stupid with Grayson Witt, has not really had many plays. It's only had like 2,000, which is a third of what a normal episode gets. So go check that out. Why it's like that is because I released the Minecraft Spooky Stories episodes so close after that. So it just kind of got drowned out. But go check that out. We answer some of you guys' questions. Fun time. But anyway, this is going to be a long episode. We're also going to be going through the Minecraft iceberg again. I'm skipping down a few levels just to make it more interesting. You guys already know about nether portals and ocelots scaring creepers and all that. So look out for that. That's at the end, but after both the stories. But anyway, grab a soda, some water, maybe some food, and let's get right into it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Defend the Village, Part 2. The Ravagers came first. Four of them blasted through the trees on the slope, scattering saplings, leaves, logs, and even a few apples upon Steve and the Iron Golem. Steve swiftly let an arrow fly and watched as it impaled itself into one of the hulking beasts, without even catching its attention. The Ravagers were about halfway down the slope, without an appearance from any other pillagers. They must be waiting for the Ravagers to finish their work. Steve knew how long. The Ravagers would easily smash through their barricade, and then the village. Just as another arrow whizzed towards the Ravager, they and another activated a tripwire. The ground fell away beneath them. Unfortunately, the trap was designed for zombies and skeletons, so only the back feet of the Ravagers were caught. Luckily, it still worked out. The trap knocked the Ravagers off balance and then went tumbling down the slope, bouncing off bumps and knocking down trees. They landed stunned, and the Iron Golem made quick work of them. The two remaining Ravagers stopped their rampage momentarily and watched the downfall of their brethren. Steve tried to bring them closer with some shots from his bow. The arrows were shrugged off. Deciding upon a course of action, they began their rampage again, this time avoiding Steve and the Iron Golem and heading straight towards the village. Thinking fast, Steve manually activated one of the traps in the Ravager's path at the right moment. TNT exploded with a deafening boom, sending dirt, stone, and Ravagers flying. As the Ravagers thudded to the ground and the Iron Golem clanked over to them, Steve looked up the hill and saw the rest of the pillagers, witches, illagers, and vindicators all glowering down at him, loading crossbows and readying potions. The Ravagers were merely a warm-up. The real raid was about to begin. Potions of poison, weakness, and harm rained down on Steve and the Iron Golem. Steve held his shield above his head and was spared from the effects. The Iron Golem, due to being metal, was immune to poison and weakness, but Steve could see a look in concern as he dodged charming potions. Well, as concerned as an iron golem could look. A witch toppled down the slope from a well-shot arrow, and Illidur returned the favor with its crossbow, nearly piercing Steve's shield. The first wave of arrows bounced off the iron golem, causing it to flash red again and again. Cracks began to appear along the iron golem's torso as it confronted the volley. Knowing that if it didn't do something, its time would be over soon, the iron golem broke down a section of the barricade and began its quick and mechanical ascent of the hill. The Illidur took their cue and began their descent to confront the golem. Steve knew his ally had no chance alone. Vaulting over the barricade, notching an arrow, and sprinting towards the golem, he prepared to fight for his village. Steve reached the side of the determined golem halfway up the hill in the lull between volleys as the Illidurs reloaded and the witches brewed. The golem slowed down to let Steve keep pace easier. The Illidurs paused their descent a mere 30 blocks away and released their most vicious attack yet. The sounds of strings releasing their arrows filled the air. Steve kneeled on the ground with his shield before him. A potion of weakness landed beside him, and he felt his muscles lose their strength. Arrows thud into his shield, pushing him back and almost knocking the shield out of his grip. More arrows. His shield began to form a large crack. An arrow pierced his shield and stopped quivering, an inch away from his chest. Three more arrows landed in quick succession. With this, his shield splintered in two, dropping out of his hands. As soon as his shield broke, the Illidurs began focusing on him. Five arrows thudded onto his armor, denting it. He tried to draw his bowstring back, but he was still weakened. An arrow struck his helmet, making a dinging sound and forming a crack. Another arrow did the same to the side of his chest plate. His weakness finally wore off, and Steve quickly let three arrows fly, two hitting their marks. He got another two arrows off before the Illidurs finished reloading. Steve knew something miraculous would have to happen for him to escape uninjured, or even alive. Scanning around, Steve saw an opening to a small cave in the hillside. As arrows and potions landed around him, he ducked into it. Placing his anvil, he quickly patched his armor as fast as possible. With a new surge of determination, Steve remembered his now fallen ally, the Iron Golem. He drew his sword, glinting in the light of his placed torches. Heavy footsteps in the "hrr" of villagers came from just outside the cave and echoed around it. Steve gripped his sword tighter and listened intently. He had a plan. Suddenly, a potion sailed through the air. Steve lunged to the side and saw the swirling brown particles of a harming potion appear on the cave's far wall. Two vindicators rushed in, iron axes high above their head, grinning with anticipation. Steve stood his ground. He knew he was trapped. With a clang of iron on iron, a vindicator's axe smashed onto his upraised sword. The second vindicator ducked and smashed his axe into Steve's side. Flashing red, Steve was thrown to the side. Quickly rising, Steve administered two strokes to one vindicator, but received an axe stroke in return. The Illidurs poked their crossbows into the cave and left some arrows, hoping to help their allies. Fortunately for Steve, two arrows went astray, pierced one of the vindicators. Close to death, the Illidur stumbled towards Steve, trying to complete its given duty. With a slight wince of regret, Steve ended its rampage. Another volley of arrows whizzed into the cave, bouncing off his armor. Steve heard a noise and looked just in time to dodge another potion, this one bright green. Turning to see where it landed, Steve saw the last vindicator, who had been behind him, about to strike, stumbling away, drenched in green particles, flashing red again and again. It kneeled on the ground, wincing under the effects of the poison. Steve took his chance and sprinted towards the door of the cave. He pushed through and struck the surprised group of witches and pillagers reloading outside it. He knew exactly where to go. He kept on sprinting, hearing and feeling arrows hitting his back and the ground around him. He turned. It was working. They were following him. Hoping he was far enough ahead, he stopped and quickly drew his bow, notched an arrow, and took out a witch about to launch a potion of weakness. The villagers were riding on his trail, enraged, wanting nothing but his death. He was very close to the spot. Stopping momentarily, he shot off another few arrows, just to make sure they wouldn't stop following him. He was headed towards the village, and the villagers were more than happy to follow him that way. Steve had reached his destination. Sprinting out of sight behind the rise of the slope, he kneeled on the ground, preparing to make the shot. As the villagers reached the section of the hill he had just run over, he let loose an arrow. It soared over the slope, causing the villagers to duck, and impaled itself into a wooden button. Almost instantly, TNT blew up the hillside, raining debris all over Steve and leaving him with a ringing sound in his ears. He peeked his head out. All the Illidurs were gone in the explosion, left a giant scar across the grassy slope. The village was saved. Steve hurried over to the bell in the center of his village and rang it loudly to signal victory. Villagers peeked their heads out and started to cheer, They were safe, and the village was saved. Steve only stayed long enough to share his story of how the raid was defeated, then rushed off with more urgent matter on his mind. He had to find his ally, the Iron Golem, to see if there was any chance of repair. Finding the spot where Steve had last seen them, he began to search. Nothing. Then he heard the quiet clanking of metal from over a rise. When he got there, he found his ally cracked and on the ground. As he approached, the Golem moved its arm slightly, so he knew he was alive. Taking some extra iron from his inventory, Steve began to repair the Golem. Soon, it was able to stand, and they began their walk back to the village, knowing the village was safe for a little longer. The end. The next story is by Zachariah. Hope you're having fun in Georgia, Zachariah. It is called The Sniffer. The light of the sun brushed the roofs of the village. All of a sudden, the village came to life. Fishermen went to the lake, farmers went to their crops, and the nitwit just meandered around, annoying everyone. Hannah opened her doors to a typical calm morning and opened the shop. Unlike the villagers, who sold fish, wheat, and whatnot, Hannah sold flowers. When she first started, she did not expect to have much success in the place where everyone was only interested in emeralds and their own loot. But the villagers were fascinated by her ware. She had tulips and daisies and roses, of course, but the flower that the village was most captivated by was the torch flower. The flower was new to their eyes, and its exotic appearance and beauty made everyone make room in their schedule to stop by to strike a bargain. It brought joy to Hannah's heart to see the villagers walk away gazing at their new torch flower. Even the nitwit was seen occasionally staring at the store's flowers from a distance. Hannah opened the chest, pulled out a pot, and potted another plant. She grinned as she looked at her new item, the pitcher plant. The new plant was blue and purple, with a bulge at the bottom of the bloom and a cup-like opening at the top. This was sure to draw attention. As soon as she put it on display, a curious farmer walked over to get a closer look. Soon there was quite a group bargaining for the plant. Hannah reluctantly had to refuse all but one of the villagers. She only had one pitcher plant, but told the villagers that she hopes to have more in stock soon. One villager inquired where she got her exotic flowers, but she did not tell. Business went on throughout the day, selling torch flowers and daisies and the like, until it became time to close. Hannah put everything away and went to her small house. However, she did not go to sleep. She grabbed 10 loaves of bread, her set of leather armor, and a sword. A night's journey was ahead of her. She set off. After a lucky night of mainly just zombies and spiders, Hannah had reached her destination, a plateau, in the midst of a flowery field. She had come here to visit a friend. She climbed the plateau until she reached the top, and there it was, the sniffer. Its red and greenish-blue fur, its big yellow nose, its caterpillar-like movement. The sniffer brought comfort to Hannah. Last year, Hannah had found the sniffer's egg and raised it to adulthood. When Hannah realized that this placid beast had the ability to sniff up flowers, she put it to use and set up a flower business. Hannah lovingly patted the sniffer on its big nose. The sniffer was the key to her success. The sniffer, all of a sudden, took a big whiff of the air. It smelled something underground. Nose to the ground, it started search, sniffing and sniffing. Suddenly, it plopped down. Hannah watched with a smile. The sniffer started to dig with its nose, moving dirt sediments out of its way, till out popped a seed. Hannah ran over with delight. It was a pitcher plant seed. She gave the sniffer a big hug. "You just made another villager happy, my friend," she whispered to it. After saying her goodbyes to the sniffer, she set off for the village. If she hurried, she could make it back before dark. The next morning, Hannah opened shop again. Her assortment of flowers was still normal. The new seed had needed time to grow. Villagers came and bought flowers and talked with Hannah about farm troubles, how the fish were really biting this week, and how great it was that the nitwit wasn't around to bother anyone since he was visiting his seventh cousin. Hannah enjoyed listening to the villagers talk about their lives, as much as she did selling them flowers. Eventually, the sun yet again began to set over the village. Hannah closed her store and began another trek to the plateau. The sniffer was gone. Hannah was confused, shocked, and terrified. No one was supposed to know about the sniffer. Where was the sniffer now? Hannah fell to her knees and wept. The sniffer had been such a friend to her. Now she may never see it again. Thought the sniffer, that also meant that she may soon be out of business. Would she ever see her friend again? Hannah got up. Yes, she would see her sniffer again. She would search into the fog of the Farlands if she had to. She panned the area, looking down around her. To the north, there was rocky cliffs and mountains. If someone had led the sniffer away, it would be quite difficult to get through that terrain. To the east, there was a desert. They could have gone through there. To the south, there was meadows and a field. Hannah had come from that way, so the chances of someone leading a giant pinata cow in that direction decreased, but it was still a possibility. To the west, there were woods and campfire smoke? Hannah looked closer, and sure enough, there were clouds of smoke floating into the sky. Hannah felt something that said that that was just where she would find her sniffer. Even though it seemed ridiculous to hide something just 10 chunks away from where it was stolen, who would be that lazy? Hannah climbed down the plateau and headed in the direction of the smoke. Hannah had almost reached the source of the smoke when she heard a voice. "Come on, get sniffing. Find me a flower." Hannah knew that voice. It was the nitwit. She peeked from behind the tree just in time to see him punch her beloved sniffer. The sniffer honked in pain. "You heard me. Get to work." Hannah had had enough. She rushed out from her hiding place and faced the villager. "You," she shouted. "You keep your hands off my sniffer." She pointed a sword at the nitwit. He was petrified. Shuddering, he stood there, wide-eyed, his head hung in shame, and prepared himself for the worst. Hannah stood. She watched the villager as he stood quivering, tears dripping down from his face. Then she realized. She saw what drove this villager to steal her sniffer. It was so obvious. The nitwit wanted what everyone else in the village wanted. A flower. The beautiful, exotic plants that Hannah sold captivated everyone, including this villager. Although Hannah disagreed with the way that the nitwit went about trying to get these flowers, she felt sorry for him. She dropped her sword. "You could have just asked me for a flower, you know. Losing one flower wouldn't have done much harm." The nitwit looked up hopefully at Hannah. She continued. "You don't know how to treat a sniffer. It may have died if I hadn't found you." The nitwit hung his head again. Hannah went on. "Then what would have happened? Nobody would have been able to get any torch flowers or pitcher plants. Not even you. Was this really a good idea?" The villager sat down, ashamed of what he had done. Hannah knelt down next to him. "It's going to get dark soon. We should go back to the village. I have a pitcher plant seed that you are welcome to raise." The teary-eyed nitwit looked up and smiled at Hannah. She helped the villager up, and after bringing the sniffer back to its home, they headed back to the village. Thanks again to Zachariah for sending in his story. The next thing we're going to do is go through the Minecraft iceberg by Perbot. If you do not know what a Minecraft iceberg is, an iceberg is a type of chart. At the tip of the iceberg is the most known things. Nether portals, the nether, the end, all that. And at the bottom is the least known things. So I've skipped down to the fifth layer, so then it can be more interesting. So we'll just go through it. I'll read the entry, and then if I have any comment on it, I'll say. But thanks to Probot for making this. I'll have a link to the Minecraft iceberg in the description, so if you want to check out the full thing, he linked an explanation document. This is what I'm using. So anyway, let's get into it. So the first entry is the gray tabby cat. In the Bedrock edition of the game, the texture file for a gray tabby cat exists. This texture is completely unused and cannot be spawned in the game. I saw the texture for this, and it looks like a normal cat, so I don't know why they're not using it. Maybe they thought there were too many, there's already 11, but it looked pretty completed. I don't know. Maybe they decided in the, whenever they added cats, it wasn't 1.14, right? I don't think it was. That they just didn't want that. So, yeah. Also, here, I'll just take this time to clear something up. This isn't related to the iceberg, but a lot of people are talking about how Minecraft Spooky Stories is so fake and I can't believe you'd lie. Well, Minecraft Spooky Stories and all these stories are all fictitious. I'll tell you if they're not, but I haven't really shared any non-fictitious stories. It's Minecraft short stories, not Minecraft true news. So, all this is fictitious, no resemblance to any person living or dead. I have not experienced any of this, usually. So, yeah, it's not real. Okay, next one. Snooper, a feature Mojang used, and is still using, to collect data on users, either by the client or by server. It was first introduced on July 23, 2012, with the ability to opt out, but was disabled in 1.13 and removed entirely in 1.14 in order to comply with EU's GDPR privacy laws. Telemetry, via Snooper, was brought back in 1.18, however. The claimed reason was to find where the biggest problems in the game were, with no options to opt out. So, this was a big controversy. I'm not gonna get into it. But, I mean, I can see why some people don't want Mojang knowing their chats, being able to monitor that, but it doesn't affect me. So I can see people's concern, but I don't care much. I don't really have an opinion on it. But I know why some people do. Next one, in-dev house. When players started up a map in the in-dev version of Minecraft, the spawn location was always in a 7x7 house made of mossy cobblestone, a block that couldn't be acquired naturally anywhere else. These houses contained chests filled with full stacks of every block and item in the game. A stack used to be 99 items. In later versions, these chests were removed. The houses were updated to be made of planks and have a floor made of stone. A house made of planks and a floor made of stone, so they're like villager houses? I think I've seen an in-dev house. I've seen a picture of it. My only experience with the tutorial thing is the Xbox tutorial world, where it has the like grounds you start in, and then Minecraft and the Skyman of Wool or concrete or something. But no other comment. Next one, 12 Mark 40 Awesome. A joke drawing made by Mojang dev Mark Watson made in MS Paint and posted to Twitter on October 4th, 2012. Depicts volcanoes with lava tubes, more dragons, coral fish, and fish blocks. Coral and fish mobs were added to the game during Update Aquatic in Java 1.13. Haven't seen the picture. Don't know what it means when it says more dragons. It is in parentheses, so I'm guessing it was a word written in MS Paint. I don't think it was a sign that they were working on coral mobs. I think it was just a teaser that wasn't meant to be taken seriously. I feel like Terraria devs have done that sometimes. But, yeah. Next one, Alpha Snow Worlds. Winter mode was a randomly occurring map type that turned the entire world snowy, technically acting as the first biome in Minecraft besides regular plains. Side snowfall, oceans are frozen over, and animals spawn less frequently. So, Alpha. So, there's only one biome in Alpha? That's right, yeah. I guess it's kind of like the choose one biome selection in the Minecraft screen. I've done it, turned it to Taiga, because Taiga, large Taiga, whatever it's called, where all the Taiga trees are 4x4, or no, 2x2, that is my favorite biome. But definitely don't want a whole world of it, because snow kind of sucks for building. Unless you use string to stop the snow from falling. Next one, Ruby Dung, an unreleased game notched made before Minecraft, based on Dwarf Fortress. The name stood for Rubylands Dungeons. Rubylands being the game world that Notch envisioned. The grass and cobblestone textures in that game were later reused in Minecraft, as Notch tried to make a first-person version of the game. I don't know why this one's so low. I feel like a lot of people know about the Ruby Dungeon. So, I've seen pictures of Ruby Dung, look kind of scuffed. It did. And then, isn't the grass texture, I don't think the grass texture is the same as Ruby Dung. That was for Alpha, wasn't it? The original cave game, that was the grass texture. So, the origins of Minecraft. Next one, full block chests. When chests were first introduced during in-dev on January 24th, 2012, they are considered a solid block. The block model was shrunk for beta 1.8 on September 9th, 2011, as part of a chest update, which also included an opening animation, proper rotational placement, and generation in mineshafts and strongholds. So, I guess they just didn't make them a solid block anymore, because you can waterlog them, and they haven't been a solid block for a while, it appears. So I guess it was just block you right click on and then goes to the chest UI. Pretty cool. Next one, MATTIS crafting menu. Crafting system used by Pocket Edition Alpha, short for Minecraft Advanced Touch Technology Interface System. The crafting menu is pretty similar to the recipe book in modern versions of Minecraft, with grids of items showcasing what the player can make using the items in their inventory. This crafting menu didn't have enough space to show every item in the game, so the player uses a crafting table. And as a result, many blocks had to be moved to other crafting blocks, such as the old stone cutter for stone type blocks. Okay. So, Old Pocket Edition UI. It sounds primitive. I don't have many comments on this. I don't really use the crafting menu. I just look it up on the wiki. Because usually the menu, if I don't have the parts for it, and I don't have just enough items mod enabled, I won't know how to craft it, and it won't show me, so I'll just go to the wiki. Okay, we have two more. This one is shorter because I didn't want to be as long, because whenever I make a 40-minute episode, retention is hurt a lot. So if you guys want longer, tell me inside the message below. Tell me inside the question below. Anyways, on to the last two. Dolphin, animal cruelty. Mojang refused to add the ability to make dolphins rideable, claiming that it was animal cruelty, even though pigs have been rideable for so many years. Sharks won't get in the game for more or less the same reasons. One of the reasons is that Mojang believes it would lead people to believe sharks in the real world are hostile. Though it makes sense, since all hostile mobs currently in the game are fantasy-based. Why Mojang doesn't want dolphins to be rideable is still a mystery. However, and then it says, see China appeasement. We won't go over that one today. Look out for the 600,000 or 700,000 plays episode one. So, first of all, why can't sharks be neutral? That would make a ton of sense, I guess. So if you hit a shark in real life, sometimes it'll get scared and not attack anymore. I feel like that's one of the most foolproof ways to get the shark to go away. But you could make them neutral or passive, and then they're passive, and then they attack squid or dolphins or something. Add seals to the game, that would feel real modded. Yes, pigs are rideable. Dolphins can't be. They'd be talking about animal cruelty, but then they'd be seeing the Minecraft community make the most cruel cow farms in existence. Just shove like 20 cows into one block and then kill them all. Collect their meat and just start breeding them back into that block. So, guess Mojang doesn't care about that. Next one, footsteps. A particle that was introduced in Beta 1.5, though it was never used, could still be created via command blocks, however. The particle was removed in 1.13 due to the flattening. Footsteps were immortalized as part of the April Fool's Day 2020 Infinity Update, inside a chest guarded by Iron Golems. There's another Easter egg in this dimension, as underneath the stairs leading to a chest is a sign saying, "This is not a sign," as a reference to the phrase, "Sisi ni pas une pipe," or "This is not a pipe," and Rana Magritte's "These Treachery of Images," depicting a painting of a pipe. Sorry for the terrible pronunciation of that French. And to you, René Magritte's. But have not played the April Fool's Affinity update. Actually, no, I've played a tiny amount of it. Have not gone to a different dimension. I just played it for like 5 seconds. But I do see the footstep particle introduced in mods. I personally think it's distracting. So I'm not a fan. I think it's good that they removed that. This mentions the flattening. I'm guessing that's where they scrap some unused textures from the game's code to, I guess, make it run better or be smaller. I don't know what the flattening is. I'm just guessing that's what it is. But an interesting piece of Minecraft trivia. Anyways, I hope you guys liked this episode. Thank you guys so much for the support. Now I've done this without you. Anyway, I'll see you guys inside the next episode.